Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning. You know, I've been watching all of the media that I can for the reaction to the Comey the testimony, and I would say to go through right now, I don't see that this guy damaged Trump that much any more than he was already damaged by whatever things that you want to say that he fails at or such. But I do believe that James Comey got up to hit a grand slam and ended up, well, he was sent to the plate to hit a grand slam in the ninth inning, and instead he tried to bunt his way on and struck out. I just don't see the damage. There is a number of articles that have to do with some of the things that he did, and I think the one thing that stands out to me from this testimony that he gave was that he ended up, as the head of the FBI, being afraid to come out with information. He sent it to his best friend at Columbia Law School, who then leaked it. So the head of the FBI is a leaker, and I think he's put himself in some level of risk of getting prosecuted, or at least raked over the coals as he is right now. Now let me go over some more headlines for you. Google News that Trump is painting Comey as a stranger, and there was another interesting thing that came out. This guy Preet, this state's attorney in New York City, the New York federal prosecutor, he admitted that he was fired the day after he refused to take a call from Trump. And I think Trump tried to call him three times, and he said that you just don't do that. So, but I don't know. I mean, if the president wanted to call up and say, I wanted to know if you want to stay on in your position and, you know, if we believe in the same things, whatever. I don't know if that is, I mean, I don't think it's illegal, so. Now, John McCain, who gave a very bizarre set of statements during this interview with Comey, now says that America was better under Obama, which I think is sad. If it wasn't for McCain's screw-up when he was running for office, Obama would have never gotten in there, and Obama disrespected McCain, you know, so I don't know. There's just so many strange stories out there these days, but John McCain should really consider retiring. If you, the only thing that you have to offer is attacking your own leader, I think it's time to resign. And I don't really see a lot of other news right now. Going to the Drudge Report, coal mines opening up in Pennsylvania. Now they're going on into the investigation in the for the Russia problem. The only issue, though, is that it became apparent through this Comey testimony that there was no Russian collusion. They ought to shut this special prosecutor or special counsel down. It's absolutely absurd to get up there. And Mueller is one of Comey's very good friends. So Delta Airlines and Bank of America are dumping a New York City public theater over a play they put on that was about assassinating Trump. These are just such strange times that we're living in. Another example, Puerto Rico going bankrupt, $70 billion in debt, or $70 billion in bonds that it can't honor. And yet, so now it's trying to become a state. They just voted to become a state. Probably their only move. All right, so let's get into the Comey stuff just a little bit. And there's just so much of it. It's really astounding. But James Comey is no longer working for the government. And I like when Newt Gingrich says he just comes across as a very bitter guy trying to get revenge like everybody else. Getting revenge against what, though? I mean, here's a guy that got up and stated that Donald Trump was crazy. Did he really think that he was going to have his job long after that? I mean, he acts as an independent force, but he's not strong enough to even bring out and ask for an independent or special counsel. So here's a little bit from Fox. Director Kallstrom, Comey made a fool of himself.
But it was fair to say what was literally true. There is not a counterintelligence investigation of Mr. Trump.
What was it about that meeting that led you to determine that you needed to start putting down a written record?
I was honestly concerned that you might lie about the nature of our meeting.
Why didn't you stop and say, Mr. President, this is wrong. I cannot discuss this with you.
I was so stunned. I've seen the tweet about tapes. Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
Did you show copies of your memos?
Yes. Well, I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter.
Here now to react, somebody who's dealt with a lot of FBI directors in his time, James Kallstrom, former FBI assistant director, who joins us now. Jim, first of all, it is becoming a he said, he said sort of thing. Jim Comey says the president lies. The president said that he lied about the demanding loyalty statement. Do you have a horse in this? Do you trust one or the other?
Hi, David. How are you?
Fine.
I thought Comey really made a fool out of himself today. I mean, I think it's clear now that, you know, there's on a few facts. Number one, the president was not under investigation.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, without question. Number two, I mean, he was eager to see if any of his cohorts or as you call them, satellites were, and he asked to be notified of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this whole Russian thing is just basically a bunch of BS. Who do I believe? I don't believe Jim Comey, because here's the reason, and this isn't political. This isn't about Democrats and Republicans. I have a pretty low opinion of the vast majority of all of them, quite frankly, David. But Jim Comey, you know, was just not up for the task. When he got the note or the phone call or the conversation with the Attorney General to, you know, have this investigation of Hillary Clinton, and but, you know, don't call it an investigation, call it something else. And by the way, you don't impanel a grand jury either. You know, on that day, I mean, he should have seriously considered resigning, because you don't conduct major investigations by calling them something else.
Yeah.
You don't conduct major investigations by not impaneling a grand jury, because then you cannot compel any kind of testimony or get search warrants, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But even with the inability of doing that, you know, he chose, the music was playing, and he chose to dance with the devil. And this investigation went on, sort of a shell investigation, for months. But there was such a proliferation of evidence and about 10 federal felonies that even without a grand jury, you know, when he had that prosecution memo that he read of all the things that she did, you know, and then the preposterous decision, and the Attorney General the day before said, I'll go with whatever the FBI director said.
Right.
So it was all,
by the way,
you know,
Jim, let me just, for those who might have missed that section of the testimony of Comey talking about Loretta Lynch, let's just play that and get your direct reaction to actually what was said.
Right.
At one point, the Attorney General had directed me not to call it an investigation, but instead to call it a matter, which confused me and concerned me.
Now, could that itself be considered obstruction of justice? There's always talk about the president obstructing justice here. We didn't hear evidence of that, or I don't think we did. But was that obstruction of justice what Loretta Lynch
tried to do? Absolutely, that was. Yes, that was obstruction of justice, and it was obstruction of justice when President Obama said publicly on numerous occasions, "There's no evidence to investigate Hillary Clinton. They have nothing." He said that numerous times. And was it obstruction of justice when the FBI was told not to investigate the IRS? That, you know, went out of their way to basically pounce on thousands of private American citizens for no reason whatsoever other than politics.
Yeah.
And was it corruption when they decided, you know, not to prosecute the perjury cases from Benghazi and the other perjury on the IRS? So there was an awful lot of that going around.
Jim, we're almost out of time. I just got to ask you, there's another former FBI director, Mueller, who is now investigating all this as a special prosecutor. His investigation, who knows how long, some of these investigations have lasted years. He can go anywhere he wants. Is he going to, do you think he will limit this investigation to all the stuff that we've been hearing, or might he go back to Donald Trump's history 10, 15 years ago if facts were, because we remember the Whitewater investigation. Nobody thought it would lead from an SNL, which was originally being investigated, to Monica Lewinsky.
David, I don't know. I think the decision to appoint a special counsel was foolish and weak. And Bob Mueller, I know very well. He's an honorable person. But the problem with Bob Mueller being involved here is he's got a 25-year close friendship with Jim Comey. I mean, that's of interest if he goes there and looks at Comey's activities while he was director. So I don't understand that part of it either.
All right, Jim Kallstrom.
All right, so the upshot on that is that it's a terrible situation, and they need to get rid of this Bob Mueller. They need to just shut this thing down. If it was about Russia, shut it down. It's obvious that there's no nexus there. 618 Kelly O'Connell, I'm Las Cruces. So welcome back from the weekend. And 523-1450, 805-61802 text. And we'll be back with more. I got a few more Comey stories before we move on. And you're listening to AM Las Cruces, KOBE.
Calling Elvis, from here on over, I didn't leave the building, I made a computer phone. Calling Elvis, from here on
As you recall, I predicted that Comey would come out worse than Trump, and I think it's already been proved true. So I'm amazed at Comey really damaged himself. He made himself look like just a complete weakling, and hiding behind the curtain so he doesn't have to interact with Trump. And also to have to get his friend to turn in the information, the leak. And he was really hoping that everybody would be sympathetic with him. And I'm sure they were in the room. A lot of people were sympathetic, but outside of Washington, D.C., not everybody hates Trump. All right, so is Comey a dirty cop? Here is Christopher Farrell, former Judicial Watch director, and check this out from Fox, Lou Dobbs.
Leaker, that he betrayed his oath and he overtly attempted to manipulate the legal system, according to his own testimony. Joining us tonight, Chris Farrell, the director of investigations and research at Judicial Watch. Chris, thanks for being with us. Let's start with the bombshell that Loretta Lynch ordered the director of the FBI to refer to an investigation as a, quote, a matter. What in the world are these people playing at?
Well, it's clear the FBI director was taking instructions from Hillary Clinton's campaign because clearly the attorney general was giving him talking points, and he literally adopted them. This admission today is stunning. I would argue that Mr. Comey's notes are property of the United States government and that he has absconded with them. Frankly, if I were attorney general, about 20 minutes after his confession today in front of the Senate Intelligence Committee, deputy U.S. marshals would have raided his home and office, as well as that of Mr. Richmond at Columbia Law School.
Daniel Richmond.
Yeah, those records and documents must be recovered. Mr. Comey had no business releasing them. It's an extraordinary admission on his part. It's lawless. We wonder why we have leakers in the government when the FBI director is playing these little games for political points or because his tender ego is bruised. This is outrageous. He took an oath to the Constitution, and he's betrayed it in no uncertain terms.
His testimony has got to have shaken the foundations of the left in this country. The Dems have got to be beside themselves. I want to turn to as Senator Jim Risch pointed out, no one has ever been prosecuted. He got the former director to admit and acknowledge, he had to work at it, to acknowledge that no one had ever been prosecuted for hoping for an outcome. The reality here is that this president could create that outcome by simply ordering it. He can order investigations. He can order investigations shut down. And this business that the FBI director went on about, that there is an independent FBI, that is on its face laughable, is it not?
It is. I mean, this is Comey, I guess, thinks that he's Felix Dzerzhinsky. I mean, this is an interpretation of the role and function of the FBI. It's very faddish ever since the days of Watergate, but the FBI is a subordinate investigative agency of the Department of Justice, period. And they are answerable and they serve at the pleasure of the chief executive, who happens to be Donald Trump. It's just that simple. Trump, starting off a conversation talking about Flynn being a good guy and Comey agreeing, I mean, wishing that somebody doesn't get prosecuted or hoping that the thing clears itself up is not a crime.
Do you suppose that in all of and by the way, I feel like taking a pill for upset stomach of some sort. When after I listened to this former FBI director, he talks incessantly about being concerned and confused and his stomach is queasy. At the end of the day, you do suppose he understands the President of the United States could pardon General Flynn anytime he wanted.
Exactly. And this is a case where FBI agents recently retired and actively serving have come to me, and they have told me that they consider Comey to be a dirty cop. That's their impression. That's the stain or the cloud that's over him. And the only thing he accomplished today was confirming that. His remarks today were extraordinary. If he were serious, he would have said directly to the president, "Hey, Mr. President, I just want to be clear. I understand that you wish that this would just kind of go away, but I've got my job to do, and I'm going to do it the best I can." End of issue. Or tell the attorney general that. He didn't. And he didn't have enough guts to resign. I mean, if you find something so intolerable, so morally challenging, then you either resign or you're complicit. It's one or the other.
And this committee, the House Intelligence Committee, the special counsel, we've just heard the man who orchestrated the creation of the special counsel. We have just heard the man who acknowledged that he's a leaker, that the president of the United States was never under investigation, that there wasn't a scintilla of evidence of collusion between the Trump organization, the Trump campaign, and the Russians. Is there anyone that has standing and purity of heart and soul that can stand up in the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, and say to Robert Mueller, shut down the special counsel, we're done here, this is a farce?
Well, the problem with the politicians is it's a political football for them, so they can get in front of TV cameras and
I understand their problem.
Yeah.
I'm talking about...
Shut it down, I agree. We'll take a little segue here and listen to some local news, 523-1450 and 805-6180 to text on AM Las Cruces. Here is your local news, and we're listening to Dire Straits this week. Can never get enough Dire Straits.
Just to wish you well, let me leave my number, a great hotel. Oh, lovely tonight, baby, don't be cruel. We've turned it in love, treat me like a fool.
So is it possible in the midst of representing himself as being completely above politics and be basically a religious figure, some sort of a religious knight, that Comey is actually a Clinton subordinate? Check it out.
Well, the former FBI, Comey today, revealed he was behind the leak of a memorandum that he wrote to himself about his conversations with President Trump.
I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter. Didn't do it myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel. And so I asked a close friend of mine to do
it. What a coward.
Wow. That is quite a sentence to unpack. And to do so, our next guest joining us, he says Comey can't be trusted. The hearing is the most disappointing, overhyped event since Y2K. Joining us tonight, Congressman Louie Gohmert, member of the House Judiciary Committee, former judge and concerned citizen, I would say, after watching that performance by the fired FBI director. Your reaction?
Well, we had a lot of things going on here at Hill, and I was chairing a committee doing real work on about the Department of Justice. So, but I have reviewed his testimony. It is shocking. I mean, and I understand apparently President Trump says he didn't actually question his loyalty. But you know, Lou, you know the president could tell there's a potential problem here with his being honorable and loyal. And man, was that the truth.
Yeah,
this guy, there's a guy uses a pseudonym, Ace of Spades, on the internet. And he tweeted this out, Lou. He says, Comey, Loretta Lynch told me to lie, and I didn't write that down, but I wrote down that Trump stuff because I was afraid he would lie. I mean, you know, holy cow. It makes no sense. But one thing is very, very clear.
Right.
He was 100% loyal to Loretta Lynch and to Hillary Clinton,
yeah.
Even though he announced they were reopening. That certainly appears to have prevented any FBI field agents from saying, we found all these emails on Wiener's laptop and Comey's covering. He stopped that and then announced immediately before clean bill of health on Hillary. So I think he manipulated the system all to help Hillary, despite what the Democrats originally were thinking.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure the Democrats are thinking much here of late, but I do know this. That a man who would let's do this. Let's listen to a couple of the former FBI director's statements. Let's go first to Senator Feinstein as she questions him and see about your reaction to this.
You told the president I would see what we could do. What did you mean?
That was kind of a slightly cowardly way of trying to avoid telling him we're not going to do that, that I would see what we could do. It was a way of kind of getting off the phone, frankly. And then I turned and handed it to the acting Deputy Attorney General, Mr. Bente.
And this is the former FBI director on, giving us an insight into his emotional state. If you would, Congressman, listen to this.
As I said earlier, I think the circumstances were such that I was a bit stunned and didn't have the presence of mind. And I don't know, you know, I don't want to make you sound like I'm Captain Courageous. I don't know whether even if I had the presence of mind, I would have said to the president, sir, that's wrong. I don't know whether I would have.
Okay.
But in the moment, it didn't come to my mind. What came to my mind is be careful what you say. And so I said, I agree, Flynn is a good guy.
Well, Lou, you were alluding to it earlier. The Constitution does not mention an attorney general or an FBI director. All power of the prosecution through the Constitution is given to the president. The FBI director works for him. Everybody doesn't work for Comey when he's FBI director. And I think he's gotten that confused. The president, well, let's go back to Obama. Obama repeatedly, unquestionably obstructed justice over and over, whether it was a guy deserting his post and preventing him from being properly prosecuted, or people that have been convicted of all kinds of drug offenses. But the president has the authority to legally obstruct justice.
Were you
he
not
has that
struck,
power, and you alluded to that earlier.
As a congressman from Texas, were you not struck by the fact that the head of the FBI is talking about being expressing himself in what he called a slightly cowardly way, that he is lacked the presence of mind, that he was a bit stunned, he was confused, he was concerned. Is it Pepto-Bismol for an upset stomach? Maybe that could have straightened him out.
What a joke. I mean, what's wrong with this guy, I have to say. I have to ask you. All right, we'll take a break here. Be right back. I have just a few more clips, but I think it sums up what's going on here, which is a witch hunt on Russia. Why are they still running the Russia investigation if it was stated by the FBI director, who knows more about this than anybody, that there's absolutely no proof whatsoever that Russia and Trump colluded? I mean, shut it down, you know, but it's going to go on for years. 639 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and 805-6180 to text. We'll be back. All right, here's a little bit of Alan Dershowitz speaking about the cowardice of James Comey.
Yourself rather than give them through a third party. Because I was worried the media was camping at the end of my driveway at that point, and I was actually going out of town with my wife to hide, and I worried it would be like feeding seagulls at the beach. If it was I who gave it to the media, so I asked my friend, make sure this gets out.
All right, that was a pretty riveting, back and forth with Senator Roy Blunt, who will be joining us shortly. Added that to Attorney Alan Dershowitz, who worries about the leak period, especially on the part of a former FBI director. Alan, good to have you. What did you make of that?
Well, I thought it showed a lot of cowardice. The head of the FBI, the guy's supposed to be, you know, a strong and powerful guy, and he's afraid of a couple of seagulls. He should have had the courage to get on television and release the memos and talk about it or not talk about it. But to have some friend become his surrogate was absurd. And I don't know why the senators didn't press harder and ask him the name of the guy and then subpoena him and subpoena the memoranda through the guys. But I have to tell you, Comey did something very good, I thought, and very right today. He said unequivocally, for the first time it's ever been said by a public official, agreed with what I've been saying for the last several months, namely the president has the authority to direct the head of the FBI to stop investigating anyone. According to Comey, Comey says it is clear under the Constitution the president can decide who should be prosecuted, who shouldn't be prosecuted, who should be investigated, who shouldn't be investigated. I've been saying this for months, and everybody has been criticizing me for saying it, and now you have the director of the FBI saying the same thing. So I think this puts an end to any claim that President Trump obstructed justice. You can't obstruct justice by simply exercising your power under the Constitution. You can't be obstructing justice by firing Comey. You have the right to fire Comey. And you can't be obstructing justice even if you told the director of the FBI to stop the investigation. Of course, he didn't do that. He just said,
even
I
if
hope
you said that,
Ali, you will let
if
it go.
You said outright, no, this thing stops now.
Yes. I mean, that's what Comey said. Comey's 100% right. We have a unitary executive. Under our unitary executive, the president's in charge of the Justice Department. He can say, no, he can't say we'll prosecute only white people and not black people, or only women but not men. He can't say that. That would be unconstitutional. But he can say, I want to prosecute cocaine users. I want to prosecute a so-and-so who was a cocaine user. I don't want to prosecute this guy because he's a good guy. And what he basically said to Comey is, look, Ryan, Flynn has suffered enough. He's a good guy. You agree he's a good guy. I hope you will lay off him. That is within the power of the president to do, and he could have gone much further. Look, he could have ended the investigation of Flynn in another way. He could have just said to Comey, I've just pardoned Flynn. You therefore have no jurisdiction to continue to conduct a criminal investigation. He has been pardoned. So the president has that power. And I think we should just stop talking about obstruction of justice.
What about appearances?
No,
you know, people made a big
there.
Deal of the oddity of the FBI director and the president alone in the dining room talking about
sure.
things like this. What what's the rule on that?
Well, he did wrong. The president shouldn't have done it, but it's not a crime. He violated Justice Department rules and policies, and he didn't want it to be known that he was doing that. But, you know, we have to, in a democracy, understand the difference between what is a crime and what is a political sin. He committed a political sin. He should have consequences.
Well,
the public should know about it.
Let me follow that, though. What I was thinking about, it's a hypothetical, I know, but he was fired, that is Comey, and he's mm-hmm. gone. We know the views that he harbored of the president in this leaked memo about the, you know, putting pen to paper because it concerned the president was a liar, sure. quoting him. And
all right, so here's the thing. James Comey was part of this movement to try to make Trump look like he was involved with Russia, and we know that because why? He never stated until he was put on the stand by the Senate and the House that Trump was not being investigated for Russia because there's no evidence that he had anything to do with Russia. He never said that, but he did say that about Hillary, right? Even though it is not historically the job of the head of the FBI to do anything like that, nonetheless, he got up and stated that to protect Hillary. And in protecting Hillary, he showed whose side he was on, and he obviously absolutely hates Trump. I don't know. I really don't understand why all these people hate Trump. You might say, well, it's obvious he's worth hating the people that are critics of him, but I just don't see it. I see a guy that is maybe a little bit quirky and is a little bit unconventional in his approach. And, you know, you might say, well, he scares me. Well, I mean, it seems to me like the decisions that he's making, the things that he's doing are, from his understanding of what he ought to be doing, representative of some argument to make America a better and safer place. I mean, that's kind of what I think. Here's one last clip from... Well, actually, let's take a little break here and come back. I've got 1,000 clips, but don't have enough time to play them. So 523-1450 to call in, 805-618-80 to text. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces. And good to be spending time with you today. Today, the 12th, June.
On Thursday for
Manchin,
hours, you
Democrat
James Comey, was he a credible witness?
Yes, sir. He did a good job, and I think everyone there, Democrats and Republicans alike, thought he did a good job, and he was forthcoming.
Senator Manchin saying that it was really what was going on there. What he saw when he was
symbolized.
In the meetings that he was in, that there was absolutely no evidence of any collusion between Trump and Russia. Shut down this stupid special counsel. Here is former CIA Director Woolsey saying that the intelligence agencies in the United States are just on the verge of total collapse.
To me, where we've come in this battle that is internal to one of the branches. It's not a Madisonian struggle between, but inside the executive branch.
Couldn't somebody say, well, Donald Trump is supposed to be this great leader. Why can't he control his own executive branch?
Well, I think in part what's happened is that people who opposed him and who opposed his general approach to thing, and some people don't oppose his policies as much as they oppose his personality, has created a situation where we are not focusing on the things that we have to focus on. Take Russia, for example. we have a situation where Russia is never not interfering with our elections and with the elections of other democratic states. They call it disinformatia, disinformation.
But then, didn't it strike you, Jim, as odd? I agree with you. I thought the most interesting testimony that that Comey gave was when he was asked, do you have any doubt that Russia was involved in interfering in the election? He said none and said they did it with purpose. They did it with sophistication. They did it with overwhelming technical effort. They will be back. They are coming after America.
Yes.
Now, Comey had 9 meetings with Donald Trump. He had only 2 with President Obama in all the years that Obama was president. In those 9 meetings in the first 100 days, he was asked, did Trump ever ask him about Russia and the Russian interference? And he said no. Isn't that odd?
Well, he didn't have any precise questions on what was in front of him right at that time, but it's certainly something that we have to get our hands on. And we have to do it now, because the next time the Russians will try to interfere with our elections is a year and a half from now. We are going to lose our ability to elect our leaders if we don't understand this and deal with it.
Very quickly, we have 30 seconds. What would you do about this problem of leaking and things? Is there some...
We have to get the executive branch, and particularly the intelligence community and the law enforcement community, pulled together, working together, and behind the president in pulling things into a working order. We don't have that now. And I think some elements of both the intelligence community and certainly the law enforcement community have veered off looking into their own interests and not looking into the interests of the country. This has to get repaired and repaired rather quickly.
All right. So what's going on out there is you can see it. It's absolutely astounding. Here's a little tribute to Al Gore. And check it out.
He says that we're going to be punished with hurricanes and fires and floods and droughts and starvation and plague and pestilence. And you haven't figured out already, I'm talking about Al Gore.
Yeah.
Just me and the 2 front rows, it seems, right about now. Yeah, the rest of the room, I don't know if you noticed. Remember that Mormon noise I was talking about? Oh, no, they get it. You see, they just don't see. They probably thought I was talking about something like Pat Robertson. You know, and for me, I really don't see the difference between Pat Robertson and Al Gore. They're both trying to scare the shit. In fact, you know, the difference is that when Pat Robertson says that hurricanes are caused by homosexuality and lesbianism, we laugh at him. When Al Gore says they're caused by SUVs, he gets a Nobel Prize and a fucking Oscar. And I know people...
Anyway, so let's just sum it up. The testimony that came out of Washington from James Comey was extremely self-serving. It was the picture of a person who wanted to be at the center of everything, to be the big man in the room, which is not hard when you're 6'9" or whatever he is. But at the same time, he's talking about how scared he was, or upset stomach, or nervous, hiding behind the drapes, didn't want to talk to President Trump, asking people to help him to avoid this guy. And yet he wants to be able to get up and say that he's crazy, or things that he's doing are crazy, and not suffer any, he's working for the guy and he's getting up and he's refusing to state something that he knew, that if he knew it about Clinton, he would have come out and instead said, which is there's no investigation for Russia into Trump. He wouldn't say that until he was put on the stand and forced to talk about it. But he'd do that for Hillary in a heartbeat. Now, why he went back, I asked a friend of mine, why did he go back and reopen the leaked, the email, laptop email, Wiener email? And they said, well, he was trying to cover himself. But I did have a clip here that said everything went back to Lynch, the Justice Department head, Lynch, and her meeting with Clinton. And James Comey also claims to be some sort of religious person. He's indicating he identifies with Thomas Beckett, that he's going to be assassinated for his beliefs. And at other times with Reinhold Niebuhr, he's got some sort of a religious vision, but he doesn't really talk about God. He doesn't talk about Jesus. So where's this guy coming from? He seems like the ultimate loose cannon. And is somebody that was not putting the United States' interests first. It was right to fire him. I mean, he's leaking. No, the reason he doesn't go after the leakers is he supports him. In fact, he was the leaker number one, and he's the head of the FBI. He had to go. Kelly O'Connell, thanks for hanging out for the first hour. We'll be back 523-1450 and 805-61802 text. And today's the 12th. We'll be back momentarily after a break in the hour.
Why don't you give Mr. Gibbs, you don't tell him he's still a man. A long distance business, so far from home. Don't you think maybe you could put him on? Tell him I'm calling, just watch him wait. And leave my number on a break hotel. Don't be tender, baby, don't be cruel.
All right, so I want to shift gears here and talk about Theresa May. Theresa May was the woman, or is the woman, who's the Prime Minister of England. And basically, she came into the position by way of the fact that Boris Johnson, who was the mayor of London and had been one of the front people in Brexit, he was going for the prime ministership, and then he got backstabbed by another guy that was working on this. He basically was kind of crippled from that election, and so he stood aside, and Theresa May got in. Now, Theresa May could call a snap election. The British system is different than ours. The leader can call for another election anytime they think it is favorable to them within the period of time of that she had left when David Cameron resigned, which was like around 5 years, 4 years. So she was up in the polls 20 to 30 points over Corbyn, who was on the opposite side. Corbyn is essentially, he's in Labour, which is essentially the Democratic Party of Britain, and Theresa May is in the Tories, which is the Conservative Party. So they made a couple of mistakes. Number one, they said that people, older people that were sick, or especially that had Alzheimer's, they were going to liquidate their estates, which did not go over very well. They tried to bring back fox hunting, which is pretty much dead over there. And the third thing, though, the most problematic thing is she tried to reach across and go for people that were basically liberal. For lack of a better description, she tried to reach out to a large group of liberals and bring them into her party. And what happened was, between that mistake and, on the other hand, the problem with the terrorist attacks, which people saw her reacting to in a very bureaucratic manner. She was in the position, she's going to stand up and say, don't worry about it, the government's got this under control. And people were nervous and they were upset. And they felt like the government's position on immigrants, and especially obviously immigrants from Middle Eastern nations, was not effective. It was not keeping them safe and was not what they wanted. And so all of those things together produced a soup, a kind of a toxic soup for her. And so they lost, I believe it was 16 members of their party in their house. And so it brought the level down to where she didn't have a majority anymore. She had to make an agreement with the Northern Irish group that is conservative. But what happened was she took a position of strength and she turned it into one of weakness. She could have stayed with the same number of MPs, members of parliament, that she had, and it was a strong position, and they could have gotten a lot of the stuff through. Now, what's going to happen with Brexit is not, they're not really sure, because the left, the Labour Party, has a lot more. Now, the sad thing for her is that the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, was seen a person that people didn't want, not a good leader, and standing for the wrong things at the wrong time. So Theresa May single-handedly screwed this whole thing up. And, you know, you can see this time and again, a person who is a conservative needs to go from their conservative base and their conservative ideals and hope people see that it is a position of strength, that it is a position of effectiveness, and it's not pie in the sky. It's not, you know, trying to solve all problems through government programs, that it is an argument for limited government. And draw people into the conservative movement. Draw people in through the leadership. And she's just a terrible leader. So now they're saying that it's only a matter of time before she resigns. Now, she says she's going to stay the entire time and lead a coalition government. But it's the same part. It's the same problem that is made by conservatives across the world. When you capitulate, when you dilute your message and you try to basically become more like your opposition, it doesn't work. But it's amazing how often people don't understand it doesn't work. Here's a little bit from Fox News on Theresa May.
More than ever is certainty. And having secured the largest number of votes and the greatest number of seats in the general election, it is clear that only the Conservative and Unionist Party has the legitimacy and ability to provide that certainty.
Prime Minister Theresa May trying to hold on to her job after a stunning setback in this week's British elections. And we're back now with the panel. Well, Speaker Gingrich, what do you think the surprise election results mean for Britain, for Europe, and for the U.S.?
Well, it means a lot of instability, I think, particularly from her standpoint, because I think she's very shaky at staying in power and may well have a contest in the next few weeks. I think equally important is the vote today from Macron, who has done an astonishing job of building a party in France and has a real chance.
The French president.
The French president has a real chance of winning control of the French parliament in a way that is almost unimaginable. Created a party in 15 months and has competitors, I think, in 525 of the 555 seats. So you have two different stable positions developing. Ironically, the French may turn out to be stable and the British may turn out to be unstable. And it was both a bad campaign on their part and I think a big miscalculation, because it turned out that the United Kingdom Independent Party voters, once they got Brexit, reverted to being Labour Party voters and went back to their natural party base. I think nobody in the Conservative Party thought that would happen.
Carl, I want to pick up on Brexit, because the Brits were supposed to start formal negotiations with the European Union, which are going to take a couple of years, but on the exit and the terms of the exit from the European Union, Brexit. And now that's kind of up for grabs, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, look, I happened to be flying into London the morning after the Brexit vote. And as we got off the plane, every Brit on the plane turned on their phone to get the news. And there was a guy who I'd been sitting near, who was working in the financial services industry, immediately began swearing at older Britons. He said, if we hadn't let those senior buggers vote, we would have won, because under 35-year-olds voted overwhelmingly to remain. Well, this time around, they had the revenge. The young, particularly those with college degrees, turned out in a much higher number, and they voted for not conservative in order to thereby soften. May had said, I will have a hard exit if you reelect the conservatives. And so they voted not for the conservatives in order to give a soft exit for, to Brexit. And they got their revenge.
So to give you a sense of Karl Rove, there's something he very much wants to say. Go ahead.
Well, look, I was watching the election returns, and we've got to establish this tradition in the United States. We talk about Texas 1 and Congressional District 1 and California District 35. They brought in returns from Bass and Stroke, and then Dumfriesshire, Clydesdale, and Tweedledale, which is one constituency in Scotland. We've got to name each one of our districts.
So if we were doing this, you would say, well, the Clydesdale precincts are coming in.
Well, I'd say the Dumfriesshire, Clydesdale, and Tweedledale precincts. Now, one point of disagreement. The Labour leave vote remained with the conservatives. If you were a Labourite who had voted for leave, you remained largely conservatives. Why made the election not worse than it was? And the people, and UKIP, the vote, 18% went with Labour. The largest share of them went conservative. UKIP, this would have been a worse election had that not been a worse
election. The Independence Party.
And Nigel Farage is the head of UKIP, started UKIP. And UKIP is basically kind of a libertarian party over there. So take a break here and come back and talk about jobs in New Mexico. 715 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. I have an amazing article on this topic that I have meant to talk about last week. Be right back. AM Las Cruces, Kelly O'Connell. Is Donald Trump our Elvis? And there was an article that came out a little while back, May 29th, almost 2 weeks ago, Too Many New Mexico Jobs Go Begging, Albuquerque Journal. And it starts off, employers in New Mexico contend there's a lack of qualified candidates for jobs they need to fill, from construction workers to retail sales clerks, even as the ranks of unemployed in the state are the highest in the nation. And then State Department of Workforce Solutions claims that 74% of employers surveyed had at least one job opening that they were having trouble filling. In this New Mexico job vacancy survey, the first of its kind, they also found that employers in the state generally require more education and a lot more experience than is typically required for similar positions nationwide. And that finding likely contributes to the current woes in the state labor market. So we are at something like 6.7% unemployment, which is highest in the nation, I think. That's figure is mentioned in here. Now, what is the education and experience required by New Mexico employers? 32% of employers want at least a high school diploma or GED. 40% want post-secondary or vocational training. 40% want associate's degree or some college. 19% at least a bachelor's degree, and 29% a graduate degree. Experience, 89% have less than 5 years, and 82% have more than 5 years. Well, I'm not really sure what this is just a graph, so I think that's what they're asking for. In any event, you get the overall picture. And from the 50,000 employers in New Mexico, about 4,700 responded. So Jeff Webster, owner of Desert Utility and Paving of Albuquerque, was desperate to find 40 construction workers in April, so desperate that he offered to pay $750,000 in bonuses if the employees met his goals. Webster offered wages of about $20 an hour to start and on-the-job training, and he's still looking for qualified employees. And he said, you would think construction is an easy industry to attract field personnel, but it's not. He's also the president of the New Mexico Utility Contractors Association, so now he's looking out of state to fill these. Manager positions and superintendents and program managers are a difficult position to fill in New Mexico. And Kelly Ropke-Orth, Chief Operations Officer of the Associated General Contractors of New Mexico, claims that that might be to the aging of baby boomers and them leaving the market. As the quote, as the baby boomers generation of workers reach retirement, firms are already struggling to find their replacements, and it's not just craft positions, but superintendents and estimators, to name a few. But we have cities in our region that are booming. Denver, Phoenix, Salt Lake, all over Texas. And so we've got people that could fill these jobs that are finding work there in these other positions. So I'm kind of wondering, having read this, it kind of confirms, and you can call in and give your opinion, but it kind of confirms this idea that we don't have the best education in the state. And because we don't have a vibrant economy, that, you know, we've got oil and gas and we've got a few other things, but we don't have a vibrant economy. And at least in this part of the state, the public officials admit they're not trying to build a booming economy. We have been told by leaders in this county, this is a no-growth area, which is, it's scary to hear that, because if there's not support in the political class, in the city leadership for growth, it means that these people may be throwing up. In the experience of a lot of business people in this town is that the city throws up roadblocks to opening new businesses. Now, a construction employee in the private sector in New Mexico makes on average of about $860 a week, up 4%, but that same person working in Colorado earns $1,127 a week, 7.2% more than last year. Local public construction jobs, the pay was $809 in New Mexico versus $1,000 in Colorado. So the construction market in New Mexico has been very flat. All right, so then they list the the areas, the sectors that are difficult to fill with workers. Amazingly, construction is the hardest. 82% of employers say it's hard to fill their positions. The easiest one is educational services. About 62% say it's difficult. So what exactly could New Mexico do to make a more robust economy here to make it easier to fill these positions? Now, here's a little bit more from this survey. 82% of the openings required more than 5 years of experience. That's the previous thing that I mentioned. And that figure is even higher, 89% for jobs requiring somewhere below 5 years of experience, whatever that means. So 40% of open positions require some sort of post-secondary or vocational training. All right, so here's the thing. I don't know if there's obviously not an easy fix out there. I mean, the way to solve this problem, I think, is ultimately to do what we can to grow the construction industry so that more people get trained. And then along the way, the people that are doing the employing can offer their training programs, but also maybe more vocational training in the community colleges and such. It just seems like we've got our work cut out for us on the economy to begin with. We have the worst economy in the United States in terms of unemployment. And on top of that, when there are jobs to fill, employers in the state have a difficult time filling these positions with individuals that they consider to be qualified candidates. So it's kind of a catch-22. And I'm just wondering, 523-1450 or 805-6180, if any of you employers, any of you bosses out there have any ideas, because it just seems like we're in this never-ending cycle of underperformance. 726 Kelly O'Connell, I got your local news for you, 523-1450, 805-6180 to text. We'll be back after some local news. All right. So, you know, there's this place, Kilbourne Hole, and I was talking to my sister yesterday, and she had mentioned my sister's into the paranormal and stuff like that, and she knew all about Dulce Base, and she just, I guess, studies this stuff a lot of, and there was some other hole that she had heard of up in Washington State. There's supposed to be some bottomless hole that supposedly the locals threw cars down in and such, and you couldn't hear them hit. But I'm looking at Kilbourne Hole right now on YouTube just to see what's there. There's a number of articles and websites on it in the internet. But here's my question. We've got a lot of stuff in the state that's very interesting. For example, when you come over the hill and you see the mountain, you see the Oregon Mountains, it's stunning, right? Now, I don't know what the initial visitors thought, you know, when the original Spanish or you know, I'm sure the Indians love the area, the natives, but what the white people and the Spanish people thought when they were coming into the valley. I mean, it must have been breathtaking with the Rio Grande and the mountains in the background. It's just kind of a beautiful area, and it seems to me, I mentioned this before, but what can we do? The question is, what can we do to build the economy here? And I was thinking, why doesn't some, you know, enterprising person put together a little tour from Dripping Springs over to these, you know, Picacho Peak and the tracks, and we have one of the biggest caches of petrified wood in the state. Millions of tons. Or whatever it is, I don't know exactly how much, but it's a large cache. You would think if they excavated it and, you know, maybe put a little museum over by the petrified wood and the trackways and everything, and Kilbourne Hole. I mean, you could make a whole day's trip of just inspecting this, and then end up, you know, you could go to the winery or whatever, have a meal there, but. There's just a lot of stuff here, and it seems like we're not really doing anything to promote it. That's just one idea. I mean, there's you know, many things that could be done in this town, but one of the most ominous things in this town is the amount of empty retail space. I mean, that really catches your attention, and I'm always surprised to see anybody building new property, building new, you know, putting together, constructing new buildings when there's so much old stuff that's empty, older stuff. But it just seems like if we could turn the corner on the bad economy, it's not, you know, this is not a third world country bad economy, but it is bad compared to the rest of the United States. Look at the unemployment rate and look at how hard it is, people say it is, to open a business here. It's really sad. We've got a phone call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
We don't need any growth here in this part of New Mexico. And if we're going to get growth, then we need to have very thoughtful type of growth.
What exactly is thoughtful growth?
Well, you don't want willy-nilly growth all over the place. You just are saying how wonderful it is to look at the Oregon Mountains and the Rio Grande and the vast panoramas and whatnot. And next thing you know, you're going to be building all over the place. You know,
all right. Okay. Okay. So people come here to retire and they don't want anything to change. Is that it?
Basically, yes. There's a lot of old old folks.
All right. But how would putting together a tour of these areas and developing a little bit? I know it's harder now that they turned the Oregon Mountains into a wilderness area, whatever the designation is. But it's like Yosemite. If they just put a fence around Yosemite and say it's too beautiful for anybody to violate it, I mean, you know, the purpose of living in an area of this is to get exposed to the beauty, get educated. I mean, there's a wonderful – what if you had a little museum over by the trackways in which, you know, you could come in, maybe buy a, you know, get lunch or whatever, and you could see slides on the history of the area. You could see how petrified wood is formed. You could see the history of the, you know, the dinosaurs in this area. And that is just one stop on this. You go down to the Kilbourne Hole, you get an education on the volcanic origin of this part of the state. Go up to Dripping Springs, go up to the sanitarium up there and, you know, get some exercise and get educated on what makes this area special. I mean, why does the idea of not developing anything supposed to be better than developing it?
If you want to go develop out in that third world country state called Texas. Make your money there, then come over here, spend it here, and then go back to Texas without ruining this state. Like they
how is
Texas
it? How is all right? So you're saying that every business is ruining this area?
Well, if it is not well thought out, you just put a business here, business there. Next thing you know, you've got pollution, you've got groundwater infestation, you got junk, you got. It's terrible.
What about having an economy so that people who go to school here don't have to move out of state to find work?
That's just the nature of the beast. This is a very, very active, involved world. You just can't get a job, grow up, be born, grow up, live, and die in one little city. You got to move out.
But that doesn't make any sense. So other places can have an economy, but we can't?
You're going to have an economy. Listen, in Mesilla, we got a wonderful little economy, and we don't expand. We don't expand.
Well, there's another thing you could do. You could have more of a development of the history of Billy the Kid, you know? I mean, and I know that people roll their eyes when they hear about it, but we've got this incredible – I mean, we have probably as good of a history of the Old West as any place in the nation, and yet we're – what do we do with it?
We're doing very well with it. But anyway, let me get out to that. You wanted it. What was I wrong on?
All right. So you were telling us that Trump was going to get destroyed by Comey. He's going to get wiped out, and he's going to have to resign or get impeached or whatever. What happened to your fantasy, Frankie?
Oh no! I didn't say that he was going to have to resign. I said Comey was going to slam dunk him, which he did.
He didn't do that. He made himself look like a complete imbecile. He's too afraid. Frankie, hold on a second. Hold on a second. He's too afraid to do the job. He's got information to put out there. He has to put it out through a friend. He sees the president. Even though he's the size of Lurch, he's 6'9" and couldn't hide. You know, he's like an elephant trying to hide behind a telephone pole. He goes behind the curtains. This guy is a complete nutcase.
Oh, come on, Kelly. That you are so off the wall on this, along with the rest of your conservative friends. This
Where's the smoking
brilliant.
Gun? What? He's brilliant. Where is the smoking gun? Where is the smoking gun? He didn't lay a glove on Trump. He made himself look like a fool.
That is so funny.
You can't name it.
What?
Can't even name it. It's a typical conversation with you. You know all this stuff, but you can't name any examples. What? Give me an example.
Why should I name an example? Because if I did, I could name 10 examples, and you would knock every one of them down and say, oh, you're
oh, yeah.
This, that,
all right.
Whatever.
You're like Comey. Frankie.
Anything that is right with conservatives, it's okay.
Frankie.
But as long as it's wrong, then it's fake news.
Frankie, you're like Comey. You're afraid of getting criticized. Thanks for the call, Frankie. Have a good day.
Okay,
all right, got some there. All right, there's your that's the best the left can do. 7:39 Kelly O'Connell, AM Les Cruces, AM 1455, 23:1450. Trump is Elvis, folks.
Here's your Las Cruces and Southern New Mexico forecast on AM 1450 KOVE. Another sunny, warm day expected in the Mesilla Valley. A high today of 96. No chance of precipitation. Overnight low around 64 with west-southwesterly winds at 14 miles per hour.
Sunny again on Tuesday at a high near 97. Once again, southwesterly winds and no chance of rain. Bravo Mike, Radio Network. I'm Jack Nixon reporting.
Quick question. How can you find the best quality and the best value in one place?
Well, how about using a crystal ball?
Okay. I see Red Hawk golf club in your future. Red Hawk was recently named Course of the Year in New Mexico and West
Texas. Red Hawk players pass by four rounds to get the fifth round free.
Get a gold pass for 25% off golf and cart fees the entire year. Plus, everyday afternoon and twilight rays are the best deals around.
Well, there you go. Red Hawk offers quality and value. Hey, let's book a tee time at golflossofreaches.com now.
Hi, this is Chip Wade, TV host and entrepreneur. I own a construction and design business, and I never want to turn down a job because I don't have enough capital for hiring or to buy equipment. That's why Cabbage is so important. Cabbage provides lines of credit of up to $150,000. Apply online and get a decision right away. Withdraw funds whenever you need them. I signed up in a few simple steps and had funding in minutes. Cabbage has helped over 100,000 small businesses from every industry. Go to cabbage.com/boss or 888-CABBAGE. That's cabbage with a K. 888-CABBAGE.
Looking good, Mr. King of the Hill. Mr. DXL Chopper Man. Mr. John Sebastian.
Starting the day the right way with Kelly O'Connell and AM Las Cruces on KOBE.
All right, so I'd like to know what businesses do you think that could make it here that we don't have? Well, what we would need to change, and we've talked about this before, the city needs to make it easier to open up a business to get a license, to get inspections and stuff like that. But what businesses does this area, what does it need? Now, I think it's a no-brainer to take the natural beauty and the history of the area and do some sort of a tour. How much growth in the economy would that bring? I mean, I really don't know, but I know that, you know, my sister talks more about Kilbourne Hole than I've heard anybody talk in this area. It's like, you know, it's like people are not, I don't know. I don't know if we're beaten down or we don't care anymore or what is it, but I just can't believe that we're not doing more with the natural beauty that we have. And against what Frankie is saying, you don't have to destroy the area to put a tour together. As a matter of fact, you're helping to preserve it. We have a phone call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Aaron Kelly.
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Hope you're well. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I've been to Kilbourne Hole several times, and it's definitely worth seeing. I think one thing that we fail to realize is that a lot of these places, you need at least a truck. Some places, a four-wheel drive. They're out in extremely hostile areas, meaning the temperatures are usually very hot. You know, you get a flat out there, or you don't have enough water.
Right. So, Aaron, why don't we put a road out there? And, you know, Frankie will fall down crying. We can't put a road out. It'll ruin the environment. But put a road out there. Put a road to the, you know, I just happened to stumble across the fact that there was this giant cache of petrified wood over by Picacho that's at the same place as Trackways. Other places that have these type of things, develop them. We don't. I mean, develop them in terms of letting people tour them, making it easier to get out there, like you're saying, so you don't have to worry about getting a truck or getting a flat or whatever.
I mean, a lot of these places, though, they've turned them into where now you can't even, they don't even want you to be able to access them except by foot. I mean, which is crazy. I mean, when they did this whole Oregon thing and they included all these other areas, which Chilborn Hole actually might be in one of the areas over by the Portillos. The idea that these places are going to be preserved by not allowing people to drive into them is kind of ridiculous. I just got back from a trip to Playa del Carmen, and they have they talk about an eco tourism with all the cenotes and the underground rivers and all these other things they have there. I mean, in America, they wouldn't even let you probably pull up to the cenote, let alone get in and swim in it. So until we get a whole different mentality about pro-growth, pro-business, things aren't going to change here.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call. I'm going to have to take a break here, but I've got a clip also. Thanks for the call. I've got a little clip here on Kilbourn Hole. So check this out. This is from May 22nd, 2017. And looks like Channel 9. Check this out.
Time now is 5:42. Driving 1.5 hours west of El Paso will take you to Kilbourn Hole in New Mexico, a massive Mara crater formed by volcanic activity more than 20,000 years ago. And for this morning's special report, I discovered it's literally a borderland gem. We're on a mission to find a gem called Olivine.
Rabbit for good luck.
So it's literally a hit or miss.
That's right. And nothing there.
And the search continues.
And the search continues.
Our treasure chest. Kilbourn Hole in Las Cruces. A site best described by self-proclaimed naturalist David Etzold as...
It's magnificent emptiness. That's what it is.
It's one of the few places in the country you can find olivine, also known as peridot. Kilbourn Hole is one of the largest Mara craters in the American Southwest. It measures almost 2 miles wide and 300 feet deep. And what you're looking at around me is what remains of a volcanic eruption that happened more than 20,000 years ago. Professor Libby Anthony has done more than 20 years of research at Kilbourn Hole. She says the mix of magma and steaming groundwater formed a massive explosion.
Blast. That's called the lateral blast. And preserved at Kilbourn Hole is the lateral blast part of the volcanic explosion which has created Kilbourn Hole.
Ejected from that explosion, these olivine-bearing xenoliths or rocks.
It is an unusual mineral. Which is why it is a collector's item. This beautiful green mineral originated at least 30 kilometers below the surface of the earth.
In 2014, Kilbourn Hole became a protected national monument and could soon help unearth what's beyond our planet.
So the rocks that we see there and the processes that form Kilbourn Hole are similar to some of the things we may see on Mars or perhaps the moon. It's a great resource to have here on Earth. We're lucky to have it in our backyard.
Once the training ground for Apollo astronauts on past moon missions, the Mara crater will soon be the site of a NASA project called RIS-4E.
So what we're doing with the drone is we fly cameras on board.
UTEP professor Jose Hurtado will lead the research team.
The idea behind our project is to study how we would explore the surfaces of other planets.
Hurtado says they'll be testing tools and techniques for data collection. UTEP grad student Jennifer Dixon currently uses drones to create 3D maps of the hole.
Exciting because you get to walk in the footsteps that someday maybe an astronaut would, kind of feel what they would be feeling and look at what they're looking at.
Until that day comes, I return to my mission for the day.
So anyway, yeah, they're looking for peridot, but there was some beautiful pictures of these rocks that were volcanic. Part of them, you could tell they were volcanic, and the other part, they looked like a marble, you know, green marble. So it was really beautiful. We'll take our last little break here, but what can we do? Any ideas for building an economy in this town that is dynamic? 749 Kelly O'Connell, AM Les Cruces, AM 1450, 523 1450, 805 6180. All right, so we covered the Comey disaster, and as you could tell from Frankie, there's no there there. So there is, once again, I mean, what do we gain by chasing Trump and trying to embarrass him, trying to destroy him? I mean, there's this idea out there that there has to be this, you know, Trump is the new Hitler, and therefore we will chase him to the ends of the earth to see him make a mistake so we can throw him out. I mean, I think it's depressing on one hand. On the other hand, it's just a complete rejection of the democracy, or as some of our listeners would say, the Republican approach to government. Now, here's an interesting story I wanted to throw to you. Cristiano Ronaldo, the great soccer player, one of the greatest in the world, welcomes the birth of twins with surrogate mother after Real Madrid star's mother denied girlfriend Georgina Rodriguez is pregnant. So this guy's got a girlfriend. He's not gay. Or maybe he's bi. I don't know. I've heard a few stories about him. But anyway, that's not the point. He contracts with some lady to give birth to his children. Now he's going to have a little girl and boy. And they've already been born, Eva and Mateo. Now, I've been thinking about this for a long time. This guy did this before. He got somebody else to have a kid with him. Now, this guy, he's rich. He's handsome. He's got the body. He's got the world's greatest body. I mean, super good shape. He can play soccer all day long without breaking a sweat. Why would this guy do this? And I really think this MGTOW, men going their own way, I think it's an expression of the MGTOW movement. Now, this is just my theory, just my take on it, but there has to be an explanation. Traditionally, people in the world, around the world, more so in the West than in places like the Middle East, where they've got polygamy. In Africa, there was certain tribal things that I won't go into, but the nature of the family was different there, the chief and the... Anyway... In the West, it's always been that a man grows up and one of the marks of adulthood was he gets married, has a family, lives his life out. Now, if you're a star, if you're somebody wealthy or whatever, maybe you go through a few wives, a few trophy wives, but and maybe you have kids with those. But there was always this commitment to people getting together. It's the foundation of our culture, of the history of the West. The family, and now the family has been kind of pulled apart. And so now if somebody does this, this guy has one child with a surrogate and then has two more with another surrogate. And these are his kids. And he loves children. He wants to have a relationship with his kids and raise them. He's got a girlfriend, a very attractive female, but he doesn't want the complications of a mother in the way. Why is that? So is it an expression of MGTOW, men going their own way? And some of these men in this movement don't date. They don't have one-night stands. They don't get married. They plan their entire lives outside of the female, and they're not gay men. The MGTOW movement does not support the homosexual movement. So the net result is one of the biggest fixations in history for men, which is sex, is put to the side, and these guys are living their lives out. It is an extraordinary movement. I'm wondering, even if Ronaldo has never heard of MGTOW, if it's not possible that he could be motivated by the same instincts, is that women in the relationship between women and men, the enculturation, the socialization of women, the expectations, especially feminism and women's rights, all of these different things have made such an impact on women that it has made, for many men, the relationship between men and women untenable. Now, it's not a claim. It's just a little bit of analysis. How do you explain this guy? You know, one of the world's most eligible bachelors, skipping not just, you know, I mean, he might be living with his girlfriend, but he's not having children with that woman. So when he gets done with her, he cuts the cord and she just disappears. There's nothing to keep them together. What do you think about that? All right, I've got for you a few of these texts on Obama. If I would have been on my toes, I could have said at least he got us out of two wars. I did expect us to be energy independent from the Middle East by now, but it's no longer about oil. It's ISIS, Daesh, whatever, and they don't need to hold land to spread their beliefs. We are in a cyber war now, and Trump will never admit we are under siege. If he ever does, he will use it as an excuse to limit rights and freedoms. It's a no-win situation for we the people, from Kathy. All right, so here are some texts. I wanted to utilize the empty buses in the county for the very same idea you have, but the county would not allow that, would they? The solution to developing an economy here is to concentrate on scrapping our educational system and redesigning it from the bottom up. Scrap Common Core, teach basics the old-fashioned way. Who are the most educated and literate among us? The older generations. Get rid of the drugs in town. No mass lawsuits in our county. That's all we have here is an economy, is lawsuits. Save all that wanted money, the wasted money, and create outlets for children. Make this a fun town for children again. Make opening a business easier. If you fail, you fail. Clean up the main thoroughfare in our town. If building looks like it needs to be condemned, do it. Clean the lot and sell it. Put the proceeds in a fund to make small business loans to aspiring entrepreneurs. And yeah, you know what? I look at Caliche's, which is a great, you know, business, but I see the place is just overrun by people on Friday and Saturday nights, and I think, wow, there's no place to go in this town. Anyway, Kelly O'Connell and Las Cruces, great hanging out with you. It's 7:59 on the 12th, and I hope you have a great day. See you back in 12 hours, 22 hours. Ciao.